So, how long we got? Where's our destination today?
I don't know. We got 20 miles to cover. Let's talk some movies. People don't know how to drive.
Are we going to get lunch on this gig? You see anything good recently?
Not really. We got a little time, Steve. Let's do a podcast.
Sounds good.
And welcome back to Film Driven. I'm Andre Shane.
I'm Steve Haskin.
And here we are. We're not quite driving, right, Steve? We are still sitting in the car, though.
We're parked. We're killing time. On a gig, though. We are on a gig.
Yes, absolutely. So we don't want to change that. And of course, to our millions of fans, you may have noticed we've been absent for a few months. And that's due to incredibly busy schedule in our lives, right?
Yeah, well, we were busy. I have a very young child.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And some other things going on. And then also, neither one of us was super thrilled with movies over the past, 10 months, right?
Just no excitement.
We didn't even do our annual Oscar show because we kind of discussed, off-pod that... For once, you and I both, neither one of us had seen most of those movies.
At the time, we've seen many of them since then, and we have opinions about them, but not a lot of topics. But having said that, the Oscar telecast was actually fairly entertaining, wouldn't you say?
It was, yeah. It was sprightly, moved along pretty good.
Right.
Yeah,
and it had that surprise ending that everybody, of course, knows by now. But that
a
was
Shyamalanian
kind of fun.
Ending, yeah.
Yeah. It was quite interesting, I thought. But the winner, I predicted that Moonlight was going to win.
So you say, I have no evidence.
It's true. You have to believe me, Steve. You did not see my list, but I did. Totally predict that Moonlight is going to win. My kids will vouch for that.
Wow.
But nonetheless, I do have to say that it was a little. I'm glad Casey Affleck won because I like Manchester by the Sea quite a bit.
Yeah.
It's a good film. It's not what you'd call a feel good film of the summer, so to speak.
It's
dark and depressing.
Yeah, I thought it was very, very good. It's a rough time at the movies.
It is, but there's humor in the movie, right?
I mean, there are jokes.
I think it's important to point out, there are funny things in the movie, and the relationships have a sort of a built-in humorous component, the main relationship particularly, that that took me by surprise a little bit and softened me up for the river of tears that I cried through most of it.
Casey with his nephew.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. That's the central. And I think I would have probably given that the best picture. Although, La La Land kind of, I think, was rewarded with a lot of good box office business.
Yeah. So. I mean, it's an interesting year in that most of the traditional Hollywood Oscar contenders, I think, kind of flamed out. Which to me, I liked Moonlight. I don't have a problem with it winning, but if you ask me, I think the biggest reason Moonlight won is that it was a weak year, especially in what we normally consider like Oscar contenders.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost a separate argument of what's the actual, what we would consider our favorite movies of the year versus what wins Oscars.
Right.
But just in terms of the normal, usually the best picture contenders are kind of a mix of worthy contenders and then also what, everyone calls Oscar bait, like prestige films from the studios or like Miramax that seem almost designed in a lab to win these awards.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And those movies, there weren't a lot of them, and some of them just did not pan out. And the end result of that is this kind of subtle arty movie rose to the top.
Yeah. Well, and also you combine it with the 10 movie. Again, we've talked about it a bunch of times already, but, there's 10 Best Picture nominees, and it just seems like too many now. It just seems like too
many.
I think they need to narrow it down.
Well,
do they have to come back down to 5? I don't know, but maybe how about 6?
I mean, it's interesting in that they, once they expanded the field from five films, they always said that it wasn't going to be an exact number. You know, like it mm-hmm. could be seven, it could be 10, you don't know. And so another eyebrow raising thing about this year is just, why were there so many?
Yeah, there was an enormous amount of films.
Deserving. I mean, there was even this, you know, this movie Lion, which I have not seen to date, mm-hmm. and some of my friends have seen. Have you seen Lion?
I have not seen, okay. I miss Lion, but I have, a few friends of mine also really like Lion.
Well, the thing about Lion I found interesting, you
or
know,
maybe they were lying.
Nice. The thing I found interesting, having not, you know, sight unseen with this comment, but, you know, Andre, you and I pay attention to a lot of movies. We're fairly aware of movies. I had never heard of that film until it got a Best Picture nominee. Mm. And I didn't know it existed. So I was like, wow, they're reaching around here.
Yeah, yeah. It's, they dug deep for that one. It's the Oscars. It is a popularity contest. It's extremely political. So, yeah, everything, sort of the multicultural aspect that you know, is in the zeitgeist is clearly being pushed, you know, through the movie selections, and therefore Lion makes it in. Again, not having seen it and heard from good sources that it's a good picture, I'm sure it was perfectly deserving to be in that list of movies.
Well, once I found out what it was,
underwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, once I found out what it was, it seemed like exactly this kind of Oscar Beatty stuff mm-hmm. we're yeah. talking about. Yeah. And it's not cast of unknowns or anything.
No, 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 not at all. No, it looked beautiful and stuff like that, and you know, I'd check it out. But again, I think that the multiple, like too many films in the final category, lessen the impact of what it means to be nominated for an Oscar now, and that's just an opinion from this year. But the telecast was entertaining. I had a good time. Of course, you had that crazy ending, surprise ending that everybody talked about. That stuff could happen in any situation, so I'm amazed it hasn't happened before, frankly, but it happened this time, and it kind of made it more interesting, kind of mixed things up a little bit, give it a little live television excitement that we all like.
Yeah, I mean, once you found out what happened, it's kind of a pretty easily explainable what exactly went down, mm-hmm. but at the time, like everybody else, it was kind of baffling. It was interesting that at the end of this long ceremony, just staring at your TV for a few minutes.
Yeah,
like,
everybody's unconscious,
what's
and then
going
that
on?
Happens.
What just happened? What?
My sleep?
Well, that's exactly, I mean, the same thing. I, even now, I still haven't seen La La Land. And when they announced, you know, okay, La La Land's the winner, like by that point, I was getting up and, you know, cleaning up whatever dishes I had in front of the TV. Like, okay, it's time for bed. You know, like the ceremonies of, because especially having not seen La La Land, I, you know, no disrespect to those people, but I didn't have any interest really in what the producers of La La Land thanking their families, and you know,
yeah.
I mean, I didn't turn the TV off clearly, but you know, I'm like, all right, I'm going to start getting ready
yeah,
for bed.
They didn't get too deeply into the thanking of the families, thankfully for them. So yeah. that's I felt kind of bad for them, but I am glad that Casey Affleck won. He's a terrific actor, has been for years, very much deserved it, but. You think he could have prepared his speech a little bit? You think like that, like he just came out looking like a drunk homeless dude and just kind of hung and then walked off. Just, you know, it seems like kind of phony to me.
I kind of felt he wasn't going to win, if only because in the normal Oscar politicking, he apparently was the opposite of charming most of the time.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, granted it was for a role, but he looked like a kind of a dirty hobo most of the
time. Yes.
So if you combine that with not playing the schmooze game, I was like, well, right. He's not going to win.
Right. And on top of that, he had a couple of like sexual harassment lawsuits hanging over his head, which was bad publicity. But at the same time, which I don't know what it tells us about this year, but even with all of those negative against Casey, he still seemed to have easily won. His only other competitor was Denzel, and that seemed to be like it would be like a popularity prize because Denzel is beloved across the board.
Yes.
But no. And I would, you know, I haven't seen Fences, but I've seen scenes from Fences. And first of all, Fences was a stage play.
Yes.
Which Denzel was in. So it seems like he's already done the role, which lessens the film's impact. And second of all, from what I've seen from scenes, Denzel is fantastic. but he's doing the same stuff that we've seen him do like a thousand times in a bunch of other movies. And I think with Casey, he gives such a quiet, understated performance that, I don't know, to me it was a no-brainer of what is a better film performance.
Yeah, I mean, I was very impressed by Casey Affleck in Manchester by the Sea, so I thought he was a deserving winner. I mean, you know, a lot of people thought, for all the things we just said, Denzel was going to win. Everything seems to indicate that Denzel thought Denzel was going
clearly.
To win.
Like, he couldn't believe it when he lost. He was just sitting there like, holy shit, what happened
here? Yeah.
And it was
in the world of Oscar politics, it was almost like Manchester battles back against, because I don't think controversy is quite the right word for this, but Viola Davis, who was a great actor, won for Fences. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people thought it was kind of bullshit that she was in the best supporting category, that she's in most of the scenes of that film.
Yeah,
she should have been a lead.
Performance.
People thought she probably could have won as a lead. Yeah. You know, usually the way these things work, to my understanding, is the studio behind the film, you know, you make a decision about what award you're pushing for.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you promote, all right, we're going after Best Actress. So then the fact that Viola Davis, a well-liked, very well-respected powerhouse actress, was in the supporting category, people were like, well, it's almost unfair. Like, in another year, Michelle Williams for Manchester by the Sea might have taken that award.
Yeah.
Except she was steamrolled by the Viola Davis powerhouse performance.
Yeah, the runaway Davis train. But again, it was a lead performance. She was the lead.
Yeah.
You know, it was Denzel and her. They were the two leads in that movie.
Yeah.
Not even having seen it, it was pretty obvious that they were.
And all of this is kind of fun. I mean, you know, it's not like, well, Viola Davis won the award, so therefore the world has spoken and Michelle Williams sucks.
She was awesome.
But that's, yeah, so.
And the Viola Davis acceptance speech was the polar opposite of the Casey Affleck acceptance speech. So Casey Affleck was like, had this pretend, full of shit, I didn't expect to win this non-speech where he just said thank you and walked off the stage like he couldn't have thanked like his kids or his mom.
Yeah.
Or just couldn't think of that on the spot. Just not fast enough for that kind of thing. Not an improv actor, clearly. Viola Davis, on the other hand, had a speech that was so friggin' rehearsed, you could literally visualize him standing in front of the mirror for like 4 hours the night before, working out every nuance of that the delivery of that speech. Fairly nauseating. Even Jimmy Kimmel made fun of it. But hey, whatever. God bless. She's all right. I don't know. I'm tired of talking about the Oscars.
I am too. Well, you know, the other thing we want to talk about is normally, you know, traditionally this time of year, and I'm talking January through, you know, April, maybe even into May, it's a dead time for movies. I mean, there are new movies that come out, and, you know, there's usually kind of a Valentine's-y movie around February. Sometimes there's like one kind of big budgety thing that comes out in March just as counter-programming.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, January is famous for like if a studio makes a movie that turns out to, you know, when they finish it and they're like, wow, this thing is a piece of shit, then let's look at a January 14th release.
Yeah, they bury it.
But what's unusual this year is, you know, not necessarily January premieres, but we've had a slate of some pretty good movies that have come out, Andre.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, there were some pretty good movies, but they've been kind of good, like, crowd pleaser fare in a
sure,
sense.
Sure, no, not necessarily hard hitting dramas.
Yeah.
Not to say they don't have emotional punches. But,
yeah. And genre stuff as well. You know, I don't see any Oscar contenders yet, but definitely stuff that I'd like to watch over and over again, to be honest with you.
What's the film you've seen that I haven't?
Well, I saw John Wick 2,
uh-huh.
Right? And again, you know, John Wick, it kind of came out of nowhere, the original one with Keanu Reeves, and it was sort of like nobody expected anything from it because Keanu Reeves seems to be like the second most underrated man in Hollywood after Tom Cruise. Like, nobody can ever believe that Keanu Reeves is capable of anything good until you actually look at Keanu Reeves' whole career, which is just full of awesome movies. Going way back to, like, some of his first films in the early 80s, like River's Edge. But I'm not going to get on the Keanu bandwagon.
We kind of
yet.
Done it, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Okay, we're on it. Let's face it. Okay, I'm on the runaway bus that is the Keanu Reeves career,
the Keanu kayak.
Well, the bus, remember? Remember the runaway bus?
I was going for the K.
Speed, remember the speed? Yeah. Anyhow, so the first John Wick picture, which Keanu basically produced and was written and directed by a couple of friends of his who were basically his stunt team on the Matrix films and have been the stunt team on a few films that he's done, and they came up with this concept, and it was kind of a sleeper hit. A couple of years ago, really just a straight up action film with old school stunt work, no computer effects, none of that nonsense, just a very, very simple shoot 'em up. You know, Russian mob killed my dogs.
Got it.
And I'm going to go kill every member of the Russian mob.
Well, sure.
All of them played by actors from Scandinavia or Ireland. not a Russian in the bunch, which is annoying to me personally. But that,
is it good because they're not defaming the good people of Russia?
Well,
because
they seem such fake Russian gangsters.
Yeah.
It's just I just feel like I feel like they at this point can actually get some real Russians to actually play the Russian mobsters, probably better than the guy from Sweden. But whatever. God bless. The funny thing is, besides that, which would usually ruin a movie for me, the first John Wick was terrific. And the second John Wick, which takes place literally like minutes after the end of the first John Wick, or maybe hours, is even better. It's got like... the first John Wick kind of created a universe. And Steve, I don't want to give anything away, but... The movie starts and you think it sort of takes place on Earth, and it does, but the Earth it takes place on is completely different, alternate reality, kind of the same kind of Earth that Marvel Universe takes place in.
Okay,
you know?
It's not like the future, though.
It doesn't take place in the Marvel Universe. It just takes place in a world that is completely its own invention and has its own set of rules, not a set of rules that when you deal like with... Like, gravity still is in play, but everything else is, you know, is quite different. And you don't realize that. And one of the fun things about the first John Wick movie is that when it starts, you think it's like, oh, it's just a dumbass action movie, and it is. And then you realize that there's a whole, like, mythology behind the film. And that kind of makes it fun. And the second film doesn't have the surprise of discovering this mythology, but it does have the enjoyment of expanding on the mythology and extending it kind of globally, because John Wick travels to another country where he has another set of adventures based on a mission and blah, blah, blah. Not to give anything away, but it's not much of a plot. What makes these movies really amazing at the end of the day is some of the best stunt choreography I've seen in years.
Great.
Honestly, the movie's original, it's exciting. The action is bruising and very inventive, and that's really what these movies kind of thrive on. And again, props to Keanu Reeves, who is like 53 years old or something like that. He does so many of his own stunts, and they're complex, like martial arts based stunts that are done in single takers. It's pretty amazing. I mean, say what you will for his acting, which is wooden, let's be honest.
Sure.
Physically, that old dude can really do a lot of shit. I mean, he's got some skills. And by old dude, of course, I'm being sarcastic. He's only a couple of years older than I, but...
He's not 25, yeah.
Yes, but I mean, just the physical capabilities of that guy are very impressive. That combined with some genuinely originally filmed and staged action scenes, the movie's just a lot of fun. And again, it won't be winning any Oscars, but man, it's a kind of popcorn movie people will be enjoying for decades to come. I'm sure of it. And I'm sure there'll be John Wick 3 and 4 and maybe 5. And Keanu will be like 80 years old and, you know, beating up, you know, 10, 20-year-olds, and we'll still buy it. But his beard still won't really come in with a good degree of thickness.
Maybe they'll CGI it.
That'll be the only CGI in the film. They're gonna you know,
the stunts are real. The beard is fake.
So that's a good one. And was what did you see that I missed?
I saw Get Out.
Oh, I want to see that.
Yeah, Get Out, the film by Jordan Peele, making his directorial debut. Clarify that neither Key or Peele are in the movie.
Right, he's just the director.
Yeah, as far as I know, Key doesn't have any connection to the film whatsoever.
No, he was left out.
It's an interesting, you know, it's one of those. I don't know if it's like necessarily a great film. That said, it exists in its own kind of genre. I mean, people have struggled to describe it. I guess Jordan himself has called it a social thriller.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wondered if it's like a horror satire. I mean, it certainly obeys most of the tropes of a horror film.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, as you're watching it, the way it's laid out and structured, like, this is a horror film. But then it's, you know, it's got a lot of comedy and satire in it. And that's like, when you say a horror comedy, you picture something like The Evil Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not at all what this is.
Yeah.
It's not nearly that broad. I don't know, but it's one of those similar, like, I don't want to ruin it for you, because one of the most delightful things I found about it is that, because it exists in this weird thing, as the film's going along, I didn't know what was going to happen. You know, like, there's some foreshadowing that you're like, well, I get that something is off in this situation, but I didn't know what it would be, just because you set up, you're like, well, it could be all sorts of things. Like,
it's a film that surprises
you. Possible, yeah. So it was such a delight as an audience member to be watching something, to be like, even movies I like in the horror genre, a lot of times, you know, at the hour mark, you're like, I can loosely predict what it's going to look like when this film ends.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not predict that.
Right.
I was unclear.
Right.
And some really fantastic acting in that. And also, I mean, it is, parts of it are very funny. I mean, it's certainly a political film in that.
It's got something to say.
Yeah. I mean, the overall film is what it's like to be a black person in, like, an almost 100% white environment, what that feels like. Mm-hmm. But rather than making a documentary about that or something, it's, you know, he inserts that kind of idea through a horror movie. I mean, some people have described it as it's like a horror version of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. Because the premise is a black man goes home with his white girlfriend to meet her family. And they live in a very, like, all-white, upper-crusty neighborhood in Connecticut, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it goes off from there. And, yeah, it's really entertaining. You should definitely take a look at it.
I can't wait to see it. I love Jordan Peele.
Yeah.
I mean, I love him as an actor. And
well, you'll be disappointed there, though.
Well, the thing about the Key and Peele show, which I love, is the Key and Peele show is really revolves around short films.
Yeah, it's
all
true.
Of these things are short films, and Jordan Peele has been making dozens of short films for the past 5 years.
Yeah.
So he is really, like, he's a strong filmmaker at this point, because they are the guys that direct those things. They have partners behind the scenes, obviously, like everybody else on any film, but they drive the sketches, okay? And the sketches are all very well-made short films. So you could kind of tell, I think, that he's a talented filmmaker. He knows how to structure stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And then he has, you know, like, comedy and everything. So much of it is timing. But comedic actors, they can fool you. I mean, the world is full of comedic actors who've directed films that are not very good.
True.
And but no, this film is all paced well. Like, you watch it and there's not, I mean, it might even go down as a great film. It's, you know, like, it's not perfect by any means, but you're watching it and it's just very well put together.
Usually perfect. Yeah, it's very. Perfection is boring.
So I highly recommend Get Out. And then there's, we also both saw Lego Batman, though.
The Lego Batman.
We have a ton to talk about that.
Well, you know, I mean, I will say this about Lego Batman. Yeah, it's such an insightful breakdown of that character and the mentality of that character the Batman character, and Batman's a pretty interesting character, psychologically speaking. He's driven sure. by a lot of different stuff. There's a lot going on. And this movie hits all of that, while at the same time being a fairly entertaining kids movie. Me as an adult was sitting there going like, hey, wow, that's pretty cool. I've never really seen the character looked at from this perspective. And I really enjoyed it. I just remember laughing my ass off for the entire running time of the movie. The voice talents were great, and the set pieces were pretty funny. I mean, it got a little overwhelming with the, you know, with the too much action, you know. That
yeah, I mean, that's thing. My only complaint about it. It is like, you know, this is kind of old man talk, but it's kind of loud.
Well, yeah, you know? It pounds you. It yeah, pounds you with bangy. These set pieces, but that's what the kids love these days,
sure.
Steve. It is a little old manny, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, my son loved it.
Yeah, my son loved it as well, and I got to say, Will Arnett's performance as Batman is just so good.
He's yeah,
such a great
it
voice
is.
Actor.
Yeah.
It's so dead on, and you know, Michael Cera plays Robin, and he's very
Michael
funny.
Cera's Robin actually maybe stole the show
in many
for me.
Ways. He did, very... as Michael Cera often does.
Yeah,
but it's good to see the reunion of the our one of our favorite TV shows, Arrested Development.
Yeah,
in a Lego Batman context.
Oh, I know they never met.
So they were never in the same
yeah, exactly.
recording booth. I bet you they were. But I highly recommend it, and it's obviously it's a trifle. And again, it seems like we're talking, for the most part, about the kind of films that are not going to get a lot of critical praise, or at least won't be regarded as great films. But at least it's good to see good mass entertainment movies in the theater. It's actually been kind of a while, in my opinion. I've been just continually disappointed by movies, and or at least underwhelmed by them. And here are all of these films that we're going to talk about were a surprise, a pleasant surprise.
Yeah.
And I like to be pleasantly surprised, Steve. Surprise me.
Well, go speaking ahead. Of surprises, in film number 9... playing the character of the Wolverine, Hugh Jackman is back.
Oh.
And talk about surprise, Andre. They made a good Wolverine movie.
Holy shit. Unbelievable. How many years has it been now since they started?
X-Men 1 like, came out in, I think, 2000.
Poking
with zeros.
Yeah, yeah, 2000. And, you know, and I'm not a giant fan of any of those X-Men movies, Steve. Even the second one, I think, is a little overrated. And
it is. It's I like the second one, but it's the best one, like, you know, in comparison.
It's the best
to the
one
others.
Of those films.
Yeah,
exactly. And it was also in the early days of the new sort of birth of the new genre, which is the superhero.
Yes.
The comic book
and
superhero
I mean, that film.
Film,
just briefly, part of my belovedness is it has a couple set pieces that work really well. Like the
yes,
first Nightcrawler
certainly.
Attack is, I thought,
oh,
great.
Yeah, that made the film.
And then the battle inside the mansion is a pretty just imaginative.
Right.
So it's, you know, on that point, you just felt like it delivered.
Right. It was. It was as good as it probably could have been at the time within the universe that they set up. But I've told you this before. I've never been a huge fan of Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, even though people really love him and only can think of Wolverine as him. I don't. I think of Wolverine as a comic book character, the way he is in the comic, and he's not Hugh Jackman in the comic.
Yeah.
You know?
I like him better than you do,
you do
in the role, but I still, like, I have put most of the blame for not liking those movies on, like, the movie, not so much his
on
performance.
Him. Exactly. I'm not, I
and
I don't
that said,
hate him.
You know, I will say I grew up reading comic books, and Wolverine, the character, like, that was my guy. I mean, like,
oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, he was my favorite. And while I was okay with Hugh Jackman's thing, and part of it was almost, you could argue, diminished expectations. I remember before there ever was an on-screen Wolverine, I thought it was kind of a complicated character, and I wasn't sure who was going to play it, and I imagined a lot of really bad scenarios.
Version, yeah.
You know, like, just some horrible...
Tom Cruise is one.
That was one of the bad ones. I think it would not have panned out well.
I like Tom Cruise.
So,
that would have been horrible.
Well, I just felt that when Hugh Jackman came on the scene, I was like, well, you know, that's all
right. Right.
And, but like you, I never really felt like any of the on-screen performances, like, none of those movies really captured this character I loved.
Right.
Like, every now and then you'd see, like, a hint of it, But just overall, you're like, man, this is not... Like, I could, if you only knew that character from the movies, you might be like, well, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
You know, like, why do people like this guy so
much? It was surfacey and, you know,
and
superficial.
And now this Logan movie, I felt like that is the character I liked from the
comics. I think
they
finally nailed it, and it's cool. It was cool to see. It was cool to see. Again, you know, there were, besides the early X-Men movies, there were also a couple Wolverine movies.
Yes,
right?
There were.
There
was the
X-Men Origins.
Yeah. Wolverine.
Wolverine, which generally is regarded as a horrible, horrible film.
Correct. I think that's the correct way to regard it.
Yep.
And then, the second one, which is just called... The Wolverine.
The Wolverine.
Yes.
Yes.
Which, apart from also not being very good, committed the crime of just ruining, perhaps forever, my favorite Wolverine story.
Yeah, this, the Japanese storyline.
It was classic four-issue comic written by Chris Claremont and drawn by good old Frank Miller.
Frank Miller again.
Back before, I guess he was writing Daredevil at the time.
He was.
Pre-Dark Knight.
He was already star in the world of comic books, and this Wolverine story really put him over the top. I mean, it was so well done and so graphically stunning and original that, honestly, I really don't know why they didn't just take that four-issue comic and made a movie out of that. Because the movie they did make was compromised on virtually every level.
Yeah, and it's, the first 45 minutes to an hour of the movie are not bad. Yeah. I mean, you're like, maybe this...
Because that's as close to that story as the movie got.
Correct.
And then in the second half, it turns into some other thing, and that other thing was horrible.
Yes,
it was. Horrible. I actually... probably slightly contrarian view, I thought X-Men Origins Wolverine is a more entertaining film than The Wolverine. That takes a lot. Disagree with me if you will, Steve, but in my opinion, I've watched them both over and over again, and that The Wolverine, the previous Wolverine movie, is just aggressively bad. It's such a disappointment that I have trouble watching it, and you watch it and like individual scenes in it are bad. Like, it's just I just really don't like it, whereas the X-Men Origins has some things that I actually kind of do like.
Well,
like
who
Jackman's hair the best in that.
Well, who would have expected that the director of The Wolverine, Mr. James Mangold, has redeemed himself Logan.
Very much. It seems like they just let him make a movie that accepts the fact that these movies are, in fact, for grown-ups.
Yeah.
And that's a big movement in the genre, you know? The genre has to move forward, and eventually it dies down or goes into hibernation, and superhero movies will die out and go into hibernation, and nobody's going to make them. But at this point, the genre is going through this state of a mature genre where you can really, really get under the surface of what's going on and really explore stuff and not just make a spectacle for the kids. Now you can actually get into some deeper stuff. And Lego Batman does that to a certain extent.
Yeah, well,
in a very undercover
way. That's true.
But Logan really does it.
Well, you and I have discussed on these podcasts previously that, you know, when these movies, I'm talking, you know, when the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man, X-Men one, when those movies started to come out, I mean, they were basically classified as like, okay, this is an action movie with a superhero in it. Mm-hmm. But at this point, superheroes are kind of like, it's its own genre, like a Western or a sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of us who, you know, who like superheroes and those things, it's kind of exciting because now as the genre, as you say, matures a little bit, there's options. You know, like not everything has to be the Avengers or a Christopher Nolan Batman type take on things. I mean, case in point, you know, Marvel makes all these shows from Netflix, which are way darker than any of their, you know, the big screen Marvel movies. But Logan, for anybody who hasn't seen it, I mean, you can see that it's rated R, but just to clarify, I mean, this is a very R-rated movie. There's rampant cursing, almost like a comical level of cursing, and lots and lots of violence. You know, one of the things is Wolverine is a character, you know, with flesh-shredding claws. And, you know, in most of these movies, he fights with these claws, but it's a little, you know, sanitized for the movies.
Yeah.
It is not sanitized in Logan. There are many, many claws through faces, claws through heads.
And, yes.
I mean, not only, you know, Wolverine, but Laura, the young girl character, is shockingly violent.
Yeah, there's a lot of violence in it. I mean, yeah, it's stabby. It's a stabby kind of film, and
it's
it
true.
Makes sense for Wolverine and another character that has similar abilities to stab people and cut off their limbs.
It's yeah, pretty, and when you do, it's not pretty. It's bloody. It's vicious.
It is, but it's not, you know, I also did not think it was so excessively violent that anybody's going to be closing their eyes. Honestly, I did take my son to see it, and he was okay with it.
Yeah.
There is a lot of profanity in it, and it's pretty entertaining, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's, and large chunks of it are almost like a road movie with Wolverine, Laura, and Professor X, and it's very effective at that.
It is. It's friggin' great. I really love it. And I give special props to Patrick Stewart, who also, this is multiple times as Professor X for him, and he's great.
He is.
It's a great, great performance, and they have a great relationship with Hugh Jackman. They're good on screen together, and he's another person who really adds to the awesomeness of the film.
Everybody's good. You know, I also love Stephen Merchant in this film.
Stephen Merchant's very good, and you know that bad guy, the guy from Narcos,
yeah,
who was
Boyd Holbrook.
Exactly. He takes a character that's really, there's not much to him. And
gives him a little personality.
Yeah.
I thought he was all right.
Yeah. I thought he was all right. And it was cool because he was bad, but he was one of those characters who, he doesn't think of himself as bad.
No.
You know,
no.
He's doing what he's supposed to do. And he actually tries to be fairly reasonable in the process. Until he's not, obviously. But, yeah, there's just a lot of fun things. And I just like the whole, like, it has this sort of Western vibe. They keep referencing the movie Shane, and there's definitely a connection there to that film. But also just this, you know, it's kind of sad, and it's not afraid to not be constantly trying to have these action sequences out of nowhere. Like, everything's kind of motivated for the most part. It just kind of works. You know?
Yeah.
And Hugh Jackman has a fabulous beard. I don't know.
It's a great beard, yeah. No,
it's fantastic. But what do you think, like, he doesn't have those little, like, those colics he has on his hair that they stick out? You know,
I didn't mind it either,
but I just wanted to see a scene where he takes some gel and pats him down, you know?
Ah, well, they did have a little kind of shout-out where, where the kids at one point trimmed the beard to kind of resemble the more traditional Wolverine facial hair.
Yes,
but,
yes.
No,
I love that part,
that,
by the way.
I did kind of notice, but I didn't mind the classic Wolverine haircut being tweaked a little.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's kind of trying to be incognito.
Well, yeah, absolutely. He left that world behind, and that hair was so, it was so specific to him that he'd want to, you know, keep it down a little bit, and he did. And all of it, you know, the movie really tried to get away from most of the cliches of the superhero film. It really has a Western vibe. It's very dusty, and you know, the showdowns are very iconic, even though there's not a lot of gunfights, but
yeah. I mean, it is interesting in that, you know, while I do think it's, I mean, probably the, I'm not going to say probably, it's the best of all the X-Men movies, there are parts of it that I don't know would work if you had never seen another X-Men movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess you could say some of it's implied, but, mm-hmm. you know, there is, it's kind of interesting that even on screen, you know, Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart as these characters, they have a history between
right.
them, and the film is very much, you know, it leans on a little bit of prior knowledge of that history
mm-hmm,
for
mm-hmm.
that to be there.
Correct.
And so it's almost like we had to get through a lot of these shitty X-Men movies to get to some of the payoff of Logan.
But it's
great. I just reckon, you know, it was such a delight to hear it was good, go see it, and come out of the theater and be like, man, I really like that.
Yep. Yes, it was a pleasant surprise, and I'm certainly hoping for some more pleasant surprises this year.
So maybe this bodes well for the year, Andre. Maybe we got a good year ahead of us.
Well, I hope so. I hope so, because for a long time last year, not only was I aggravated that there was nothing actually that got my excitement up that we could talk about it, because, you know, we don't do these podcasts as a job kind of a thing. You know, we do them because we get excited about something. And there was just nothing to get excited about past outside of television. Television is still kicking strong. There's good shows everywhere. New ones pop out, go on hiatus. It's awesome. Again, great time to do a television podcast, and we'll probably do one pretty soon. But in the cinema, it's good to see at least something to enjoy.
Yeah. And so, you know, stay tuned later this year when we discuss the new Daniel Day-Lewis starring Paul Thomas Anderson movie and, you know, the Emoji movie, I think we're both really excited about.
That's going to be good. I actually, isn't that the same film? Isn't?
Oh, yeah. Well,
Daniel Day-Lewis is not in the Emoji movie?
What emoji would he be? He's versatile. Like, he can do anything.
He'd be blank. It would just be a yellow circle.
Oh.
Wow. No eyes, nothing. Just whatever you want. You fill in your
own thing. Such a chameleon.
Exactly. Anyway, well, that's really all I got, Steve.
Yeah, we got to load in.
Absolutely. I'm Andre Shane.
I'm Steve Askin.
We'll see you next time.